From 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, welcome to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you and from the Palladium at the Center for the Performing Arts, presenting its inaugural season through June.
Hello and welcome to The Art of the Matter. I'm Sharon Gamble. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Buscelli Wallerab Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
And I'm Travis DiNicola. Today I'll get a preview of the annual pairing of dance and wine that Modus Dance produces in June.
I'll take a look at summer offerings at the Indiana History Center.
And I'll talk to a couple of artists who are part of this year's Talbot Street Art Fair. Plus, there's our arts calendar we call
What'll We Do? All that and more right after the latest news from NPR. Last year's Modus Dance Theater's Pairings Concert, bringing together six courses of wine and hors d'oeuvres paired with dance pieces, was such a success that it's now an annual event. Travis DiNicola spoke with Executive and Artistic Director Heidi Keller Phillips and Board President Aaron Quiring about the event.
Heidi, Aaron, welcome to Art of the Matter, and great to have you in our studio today.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks.
So, as we were just talking before we went on, I thought this was the second year. This is the actual fourth year for pairings?
Yes.
So it is now a regular annual event?
It is a regular annual event. We started it probably 5 years ago, mm-hmm. Did a couple of rounds of it, and then took a little break and brought it back last year at Young and Larimore with a slightly different format.
And
yes.
That was really amazing. Now, I know it's in a different location this year mm-hmm. at White Rabbit and stuff, but having it at Young mm-hmm. and Larimore, and if anyone knows that space, which is sort of the old gymnasium with this almost like rocket-like metal sculpture that's built in the middle that you guys basically created all the dances in and around, that was pretty fantastic.
Yeah, it was a really cool way to show the site-specific work that we like to do.
Yeah, that's really, really neat stuff. And it was also great, of course, having the pairings with the wine and the dance. Let's talk a little bit before we get into more specifics about this year's pairings concert, though. Tell me a little bit more about Modus, because a lot of it is site-specific. It's very modern.
Yeah.
Tell me more.
Well, there are so many voices that go into Modus. It sort of has a collective voice where mm-hmm. it changes depending on who is a core artist at the time. So you might have 1 year where there's really deep, dark, edgy voices coming out, and then the next year we're really classically modern, and mm-hmm. the next year we're doing a lot of site-specific work. I happen to love site-specific work. I love to work with improvs. I like to work with non-traditional spaces, so I guess if I'm around, there's going to be some of that.
Now, Heidi, you're the Artistic Director, Executive Director of Modus. Have you been around since the start? I mean, Modus has been around now for about, what, 10 years more or less?
No, I think we're in our seventh.
Seventh, okay.
Year.
Mm-hmm.
Our first official Modus concert was in December of 2003.
Well, even 7 years is a pretty great record for,
yeah.
you know, a not-for-profit dance company
yeah.
and stuff.
Yeah, and I was a dancing member at that point, and mm-hmm. then became a core artist shortly after, and I've been around ever since.
Very cool. Yeah. And Aaron, what brought you onto the board of directors?
Well, I've always supported the arts and also, you know, nonprofits in Indianapolis. And my sister-in-law actually was a core artist. She no longer is with Modus.
Mm-hmm.
And so kind of my background in nonprofits and that sort of thing brought me onto the board 2 years ago, and then recently became chair of the board earlier this year. So I just have always enjoyed what Modus does, been exposed to a lot of the different events, and really see the kind of the niche and the special things about it, like the site-specific work, like the amount of collaboration that Modus does with other artists, and even just within the core yeah. and with the dancers, the amount of voices that can be heard in through this one organization.
I mean, is that sort of the, using the word core in a different way, but the core of Modus mm-hmm. being that it is a lot of voices? I mean, you mentioned that sort of year by year, depending on who the artists are involved, the style certainly changes a lot.
Yeah, it can. We always try to have high quality, mm-hmm. of course. And if you look at our bios and all of the training that we have, there's a lot of years of experience in mm-hmm. Modus. But what was the question?
Well, really, I mean, you know, sort of what is it that gives the, you know, continuing character to Modus, you know, over those years?
Yeah, it is that opportunity for multiple voices. Heidi is the artistic director, and like she said, you know, kind of monitors the quality of the pieces and mm-hmm. the cohesiveness. But you know, having artists be able to choreograph and having more than one choreographer for a show is something that is at the core of what MODIS does, of having those voices, you know, be heard.
If you think about how many people take dance classes growing up,
mm-hmm.
and then how many people actually get to use that in their everyday life
mm-hmm.
when they are grown up, MODIS actually provides a place. If you have a voice and you want to get this out, there's a place for it to happen.
So you're looking for new people.
We are always collaborating with new people. Always, always, always.
Mm-hmm.
We're always getting
we
new
just
voices
did,
involved.
Cultivate was our big show in November last year, and that mm-hmm. actually was an opportunity for artists, not necessarily MODIS core artists, but artists and choreographers from Indianapolis, and actually we had someone from Kentucky as well, who, you know, don't have the opportunity, aren't with a company to mm-hmm. have their work be shown. And so MODIS really facilitated that process of them, you know, holding auditions, of refining their work, of having rehearsal space, having a venue, the promotion, and all those things that kind of go with, you know, putting on a performance. And so MODIS really put together that process for
sure.
other artists outside of MODIS as well.
We got rid of a lot of the barriers that prevent people from mm-hmm. from doing that.
So, and then pairings is a great sampler of what it is you do. Then, sort of a great example
exactly.
of it. Six pieces again. Is that that's the plan? So
and
six
I have
pieces
seen them, and
paired
they
with
are
six
really good.
Wines. Okay. can you give us a preview of who and what is going to be showcased? Because now again, this year it's at White Rabbit.
Yes.
So a little bit different venue for you guys. Have you performed down there before? Or?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. We've performed there many times, actually.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how to give a sampler. It goes everywhere from a deep kind of mysterious choreography, very quick,
mm-hmm.
and then there it goes to really light, almost calliope music with umbrellas, and very sweet, very, very sweet. So
mm-hmm.
We're all over the place. And it's literally six different tastes.
Yeah. And each piece is relatively short. I mean,
I don't think anything is over 4 minutes.
Okay.
Yeah. Neat. 4 or 5 minutes.
So how do you pick the wines to go with the pieces? I mean, are the choreographers involved with that or?
Originally we were.
This year,
the wines first
mm-hmm.
and we had an awesome meeting where we would sit down with a
and
musician.
Sample all the wines.
Yes, we did. Mm-hmm. We sampled all the wines, and the chef came
mm-hmm.
to sample with us, and we all talked about what we tasted, and then the choreographers would go and choreograph based on the tastes.
That's how it was done before.
That's how it was done.
So it started
in
with the wine before.
Years.
Okay.
So we were a tiny bit late getting the wines to the choreographers.
Mm-hmm.
The choreographers actually went off of just basic descriptions
mm-hmm.
this time.
Okay.
And so they went off and did their choreography, and then we got the wines and got to taste them mid-creation.
And did the choreographers feel that they matched up well?
Yeah, we were really lucky. We got really lucky. And our whole setup, mm-hmm. it fell into place this time.
Awesome. Now, who's working on the wine and the food with you this year?
This year we have donations from Southern Wine and Spirits and mm-hmm. Republic National Distributing Company.
Okay.
And they're each sponsoring three courses for us. And we've brought back this year Chef James Shantana Sambut, who did our preparation of the food last year, which was amazing. People loved it and got, you know, rave reviews. So he's back doing that. And he'll have food from Green Bean Delivery.
Mm-hmm.
Who's donating produce for the evening. We've got some donations from Panera Bread, from Fresh Market, and from Fisher Farms.
Okay.
And so we're working with a lot of local groups and also some corporations in the area as well as far as food.
Very cool. And tell me about some of the dancers and choreographers who are going to be a part of this night.
It is all of the core artists have created six pieces, and then we have taken some outside dancers to be part of the evening as well. I want to say six core artists are dancing in each other's pieces,
mm-hmm.
and then we have asked four other dancers from the community to come in with us.
Great.
Yeah.
Very cool. And then, so this is your big summer concert. And then what's next after that? Anything you can share with us?
Yeah, we have a big project coming up, and it starts over the summer. We'll be developing a piece called In. And
In?
It will, In.
Okay.
Yep. It will culminate in a performance in November. Mm-hmm. But over the summer, we're going to be creating mini performances, improvs, and site-specific pieces to bring to everywhere. We're looking for places to go right now. We want to go to community centers and parks and neighborhoods and bring this work there. And it's really based on inclusion and exclusion, which I think everyone can relate to. And it came out of the anti-bullying mm-hmm. Campaigns that have come about right now. And we want other people to have a voice in it. So in bringing these mini performances to the community, we're actually collecting their voices too. There's a board that people are going to be hopefully posting on and adding to their thoughts and their experiences on this subject after seeing things and during.
How can people get involved with them?
We will have it up on the website very, very soon,
mm-hmm.
But they can contact me, Heidi@modusdance.com. We're wanting to collaborate more, and we will be collaborating with an artist from No Exit,
mm-hmm.
Georgiana Smith, and an artist from Paper Stranger, Tommy Louie. So we're all coming together to do this giant project that we don't know exactly how it's going to form,
mm-hmm.
but it's in the middle of forming right now.
Great. Sounds exciting.
Yeah, I'm excited.
Yeah,
it's going to be good.
Looking forward to hearing more about that as well. But between now and then, definitely looking forward to pairings on June 18th. It should be a fantastic night.
Travis DiNicola with Modus Dance Theater's Executive and Artistic Director Heidi Keller Phillips and Board President Aaron Quiring. Pairings, an evening of wine and dance, takes place at the White Rabbit Cabaret in Fountain Square on Saturday, June 18th. The silent auction begins at 7 p.m. and performances begin at 8. More information is at motusdance.com. That's motusdance.com. You're listening to The Art of the Matter on WFYI 90.1 FM Public Radio.
As the weather warms up and we yearn to be outside, many local performing arts venues accommodate us by moving their offerings into the open air. Sharon Gamble recently learned more about the Indiana History Center's Concerts on the Canal series, and about other summer offerings from the Indiana Historical Society from Amy Lamb and Natalie Palmer.
So a lot of people think of the Indiana History Center as a place to go during the school year, mm-hmm. but there's a lot going on in the summer as well. What is it like? Is there an internal kind of shifting of gears for you guys as staff members? Natalie, is there anything that changes, or do you just get more busy in the summer?
It does get more busy, even though we don't see the school groups as often. We do see a lot of camps, like YMCA camps will come through. A lot of adult groups, you know, they have time off. A lot of those, you know, garden clubs, people that are getting together during the summer still and meeting up. And, you know, they want an activity to do during the summer. So that type of group does increase, although the school groups go down. But so we still see different types of groups come through.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, with your beautiful facility right there, Canal Side, you have an opportunity to do outdoor activities that you obviously can't do in January. Concerts on the Canal, Amy, this has been going on for a few years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, really, I believe since 2002 or even before that. And it's a perfect venue for a concert. You know, we have kind of that grassy knoll area across the way that's owned by the state, but they courteously allow people to come and sit. So it's almost like a natural amphitheater between Ohio and New York Street. So the other nice thing is that we don't require people to buy food on site. You know, we provide all that, but it can really be a very affordable evening activity during the summer. You know, even the table rental, you know, $45 for a table of eight, $35 for a table of four. So, you know, it's really, if you want to reserve a table, you can spend that little bit and still bring your own food, or you can do it absolutely free.
And all of it's family friendly, right?
Yes, all family friendly.
Who are some of the, I know I recognize some names on your list, some artists and groups that have been with you maybe every year or most years, but how do you go about setting the season? Is there kind of a formula where you want to make sure you have different kinds of music covered, or how many people are involved in this process, and how does this programming work?
We actually take some suggestions from our past guests, you know, ask them who would you like to see and kind of go from there. Brenda Williams, who we were fortunate enough to get on her schedule this year, was highly recommended a few years ago when we did surveys. So we were happy to see her. And we have some of our favorites coming back. You know, Indianapolis Jazz Orchestra kicked us off last night. So we definitely wanted to bring them back. Orchestra Bravo closed out our season last year, and I think I was going to be in a lot of trouble if I did not bring them back. They're a salsa, you know, Latin group, very lively.
Very danceable.
Yes, yeah. Everybody was up dancing. So we have our favorites. You know, IUPUI, we partner with them, and they bring out a lot of their, some of their student groups and some of their faculty groups and do different things. So we have our favorites, and we try to sprinkle in a few new people this year. So Sizzlin' Greg Bacon is new. Brenda Williams, like I said, is new. And one that's very popular, our group that's going to do Beatles tributes. So
it's not summer without a Beatles cover
band.
even people too young to remember the Beatles the first time around know those songs. Mm-hmm. Actors Theater of Indiana is going to make an appearance this year. That's intriguing. Are they doing songs from one of their shows? Or
they are. They're kind of spinning off of one of their existing shows, excuse me. So they're titled Songs We Knew During World War II. It's music from the 1940s. Last year they did a Frank Sinatra tribute. Mm. So they try to mix it up, do something different. I mean, I know we've done Cole Porter reviews and Hoagy Carmichael shows with them, but they wanted to do this this 40s show this year. So they're another one, great, very popular. Always have to bring them back because we know they're going to draw a huge crowd.
I have to ask, just because the name amuses me, Peace Train and the Flower Power Brass.
Yes.
I love them. My parents make me get at least one table every time we have them.
So I'm guessing we'll hear some 60s music, some 70s music.
Yes, late 60s, early 70s. Again, lots of people up and dancing, and that music, much like the Beatles, even though you may not have been in that time, you know those songs. Mm-hmm. You know, your parents may have known those songs, or you know, were growing up with those, so you remember those. And it's a lot of people. That's one of our higher selling concerts as well. So, you know, people are over on the grassy knoll dancing. They're dancing at their tables. So they're a very popular one that we had to bring back.
You know, you're right there on the canal. I'm curious. I know this. I'm asking you about somebody else's business, but the gondola rides, did they come down the canal in the middle of your concerts ever? Has that happened?
They do. A lot of times they open up later than when we start.
Okay.
But that would be a good time to sign up for a gondola ride, because mm-hmm. The music really does kind of carry, and it really gives you a cosmopolitan flavor to the city. You know, you can experience so much when you're on the canal, whether you're walking. You know, a lot of people will come stay for part of the concert, and then they might walk one way or the other, you know, enjoy the Ohio Street Basin. But it's just a wonderful time to come down and experience downtown. And it's after the business day, but not too late, so you're not going to have to worry about driving home in the dark or anything like
that. Well, with daylight savings time now, you know, sun's up late. Speaking of experiences, we've been talking a lot about outdoors, but how's the You Are There going? Let's talk about that.
Well, wonderful. Well, we're actually just getting ready to open on May 31st, right after Memorial Day weekend. You Are There 1920 Busted, Prohibition Enforced. So we're really excited to bring that to life. It's a photograph that actually appeared in one of the local Indianapolis papers of a bust that was in taking place in New Bethel, Indiana, which is now kind of the Wanamaker area.
Okay.
It was one of the most complete whiskey still busts that they had made to date, and the police were so proud of it that they brought it back to the station, reassembled it, and had their photograph taken with the still. So,
oh, sure, that's the reason they gave.
That's the reason they gave. That's the word on the street. But it was a really interesting project, I think, for our exhibitions team, because the newspaper gave the names of the officers, the name of the perpetrators, so we had a lot of information to go on as we were trying to recreate this scene. For those people who don't know what a You Are There is, we take a photograph from our collection and recreate it three-dimensionally, including the people that you would have met in the space. So when you walk through that fog screen with the image projected onto it, you are literally, well, almost literally, entering the photograph. So when you go into the space, you're going to be able to meet some of the officers who made the bust. You can meet the perpetrator, Leroy Taylor. And also, one thing that was really interesting to me is the fact that In 1920, we had female police officers
as
part of the Indianapolis Police Department, and we actually had a black female police officer. She'll be one of the characters. Her name was Emma Baker. So it's just really interesting to think about Indianapolis in the 1920s. That's probably not the picture that most people would get. They would think all white men, you know, serving on the police department. But really, we had we were pretty forward thinking.
And also the fact that they were in this photograph. I mean, I'm thinking, okay, well, maybe women police officers were dealing with child protective services sorts of things, family disputes, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. But they were putting themselves in some danger for a bust of a still operation. Mm-hmm.
Well, and the picture that we have actually has three male officers, mm-hmm. but there were also women that were working in the station. So I couldn't say with certainty that there were women involved with the bust itself, but definitely women working as officers in the police department.
What has your research team found out? Because I always, for some reason, I don't know why, maybe movies, but I always picture moonshine and illegal alcohol operations in bigger cities, but we're talking about a small town.
Sure. Well, actually, Indianapolis, or the state of Indiana, I should say, had prohibition before prohibition was a national issue.
Progressive?
We are. and you'll also meet some temperance characters in the space, I should say. So you're going to get a variety of feelings on how people view the 1920s.
For someone who's maybe not studied that in school, what is a temperance person?
Someone who does not believe in alcohol, thinks that it's the devil kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Really pushing hard and being very passionate. You know, people have all sorts of beliefs nowadays, but being really forward in your sharing of your opinion, whether that's putting yourself in a certain position where you're protesting something
outside
that's
a bar mm-hmm. or whatever. Yeah,
sure. So really the national prohibition law or amendment gave Indianapolis more power to enforce the prohibition that technically was already going
on. But because our prohibition was in place first, we had a head start on figuring out how to skirt mm-hmm. the laws.
But people were doing it everywhere. It wasn't just in Chicago. I mean, you saw whiskey runners going on throughout the country. It didn't really matter if you were in a rural area. And sometimes that might have provided a little bit more protection, mm-hmm. In theory, for, people who were trying to make that and then sell it.
Say the name of this chapter of You Are There.
You Are There, 1920, Busted, Prohibition Enforced. That's with an exclamation point, in case you can tell.
Oh, I think we heard it. Shifting gears a little bit, I'm intrigued by the announcement that y'all made recently about Twin Oaks. Mm-hmm. What is Twin Oaks, and how did you come to own it?
Sure. Well, we don't actually own it. We've actually entered into a 7-year agreement with the Weaver family, Will and Laura Weaver of Weaver Popcorn. People will recognize the name. Mm-hmm. We have agreed for 7 years to manage and to occupy the house.
So, I see the distinction.
So this is definitely a temporary thing. We're going to see how it goes. But as part of that agreement, this Twin Oak Estate, which was Ruth Lilly's home, and before that, it was actually built by Lyman S. Ayers II, and then was purchased by J.K. Lilly Jr. Of Eli Lilly fame, and then Ruth Lilly eventually inherited that home. So it's been around since 1954 and not seen very often by the public. So this is going to be a wonderful chance for the IHS to bring in its members to enjoy events, some donors and other groups, and really a way for us to help maintain a piece of Indianapolis history, mm-hmm. but at the same time, getting to share that with others. So we'll be bringing some paintings from our collection, and we'll actually have a way to display those. We really don't have the space in the Eugene and Marilyn Glick Indiana History Center to do that. So we're really excited about being able to bring some of those pieces out for members to enjoy.
So 1954, is it mid-century modern in design, or
I've heard it compared to a country home.
Okay.
It's got kind of that broad floor plan base, a lot of great rooms for entertaining, a dining room that can seat 16 people very comfortably. And so we've had a couple of donors come forward to help us furnish the home. And we're looking forward to, as the summer progresses, figuring out exactly how we're going to get going on that.
And 22 acres, there might be outdoor activities as well.
There may be. The Weavers are actually going to use the grounds. So really what we're talking about is the home and then the gardens immediately surrounding the home.
Hmm. Natalie, what are you most looking forward to coming up this summer?
Great weather, hopefully.
We're getting the rain out of the way before your concert series started, right?
Great weather and great music. I think with the new You Are There opening up, a lot more people, you know, they're going to hopefully be return visitors. You know, they've heard about it. Maybe they've seen us. Maybe they haven't. They've stopped by and they've heard, you know, we have a new one coming up. And that's the great thing, I think, about how these rotate. You know, a lot of times people think, oh, I've been there. I've done that. I've seen everything I can see. But it's great. We rotate those, you know. Every 6 to 8 months, you're going to get something new. And so I think people are really excited about that. And there's so many things to do and so many things to be a part of. So, you know, sometimes people have their seasons of great things to do. We're all year long, all the time. So, but yeah, I'm looking forward to the great weather. I'm looking forward to the concerts. We have a great mix this year. Pretty much every Thursday except for June 30th, you know, come on out. We have a 4th of July celebration that runs from 5 to 9:30. And then immediately following, you can just go up to our parking lot and watch the fireworks. So you really don't have to go too far to see the fireworks. So hopefully, you know, people will come out and enjoy the music.
And we should mention that July 4th will be a free admission day. Normally, we're closed on Sundays and Mondays. July 4th falls on a Monday this year. We're going to be open for our regular business hours, free admission. So this is a great time for people to really make a day of it. Come down early, get your parking spot, come through, see the Indiana Experience, then enjoy the concerts. It's just the perfect time to visit.
Yeah. And on another note, too, right before our normal weekly Thursday concerts, the Indiana Experience is open an additional hour. Uh-huh. So, you know, you get off work, you want to, you know, get together, pick up your friends. Indiana Experience will be open until 6 p.m., and then the concerts start right at 6. So there's no excuse. You can come down, go through the experiences, get, you know, grab your table, grab your food, enjoy the music, and have a great night.
Sharon Gamble with Amy Lamb, Media Relations Manager, and Natalie Palmer, Senior Director of Special Events and Visitor Services from the Indiana Historical Society. You can find out the full schedule of concerts plus other summer offerings at indianahistory.org. Again, indianahistory.org.
Travis, look fast.
Where?
There it goes. There it goes.
It is that weekend, isn't it?
It sure is, when the fast cars are turning left, turning left, turning left.
Well, it's a great weekend, of course, for Indianapolis and for the race, but there's also still plenty of fun arts and other events, cultural events going on that we're going to tell you about on this calendar we call
What'll We Do on Memorial Day weekend.
On Memorial Day weekend.
Well, actually, here is a cool opportunity to see the new Big Car Digs, the Big Car Service Center.
Yeah, I've been hearing about this.
Yeah, yeah. Where they are is they are on the west side of Lafayette Square in front of Shoppers World in the, you might have actually had your car tires rotated there
at some point. This is like
off of 38th Street. Off of 38th Street, yep. And the reason you can get a sneak preview there is if you go on Saturday night from 5 to 7. Now, you need to RSVP before you go, but they're having a grand opening. All food and grog, as they're calling it, is complimentary, but you need to be 21, of course, and you need to RSVP. To do that, go to bit.ly/Yelp500. Or you just Google Yelp 500 and you'll get the link. Again, that's this Saturday from 5 to 7. If you're not familiar with Yelp, you can find out about that there as well. But it's the grand opening of the Big Car Service Center. Woohoo!
Very fun.
Yeah,
I'm looking forward to going and checking that out.
Yeah.
Hey, just a reminder, with all the stuff going on this weekend, the zoo is still open, the Children's Museum is still open, the IMAX Theater, the IMA, all of them are having great things going on, and there's lots of, you know, great music going on, of course, at the Rascal or in the Chatterbox, and fun stuff up and down Mass Avenue. Phoenix Theater has Zippers of Zoomerville still going through this weekend. Theater on the Square has their assorted fruits and vegetables going on, which is an interesting title for our show, but there's lots of other great stuff. That's just kind of my quick overview of stuff going on this weekend.
Very good. And you'll hear more about this on a future show, but you can check out Tiger Forest, which debuts this weekend at the zoo.
I know. I'm looking forward to checking that out.
I love the tigers. Here is something going on, not this weekend, but next weekend that you might want to plan for. It's Vintage Indiana. Can't believe that's been going on for 12 years. It's on Sunday from 11 to 7 in Military Park. That's the June 4th. More information at vintageindiana.com, but as the name might tell you, it is a fabulous sampler of wine, food, and fun, all homegrown. And if you're not aware of how many dozens of wineries there are in Indiana, go to Vintage Indiana, and you can find out lots more and choose your favorite vintages.
A little tasting.
That's right.
ISIS and Civic Theater are hosting a Girls Create Music Summer Songwriting Camp. This sounds really cool. ISIS of Indiana, which is the group that brought a tribute to women in jazz, and the Femme Blue Festival, you've probably heard about it here on Art of the Matter. Well, they are doing a songwriting camp for girls this summer. It's part of their ongoing mission to mentor future generations of women in music. And so the Girls Create Music Summer Songwriting Camp is going to bring in college instructors and professional performing artists and songwriters. And it's for girls age 9 to 16, all on the art and process of songwriting. Takes place June 27th through July 2nd at the Booth Tarkenton Civic Theater on the campus of Marion College. And you do need to apply for it, and you can submit your applications through June 1st because it is limited. So you do need to get your application in now if you want to check that out. Very, very cool thing. If you want to get more information, go to isisofindy.com. That's ISIS, I-S-I-S, of indie.com to learn out how you can get your girls in the Girls Create Music Songwriting Camp.
Very good. Hey, time is running out. I know you're going to be telling us a bunch of cool information about new exhibitions coming up at the Children's Museum this summer on next week's show. But if you're looking for something fun to do, and especially if your kids are just out of school and they want to see something really cool, it's the Masterpieces of Jelly Belly Art on view at the Children's Museum.
That's
and
fun.
It's so fun. And it is reproductions in jelly beans. Yes, Jelly Belly jelly beans made famous by President Reagan. But it's reproductions of American Gothic, Girl with a Pearl Earring, The Great Wave off Kanagawa, The Mona Lisa, Starry Night, We Can Do It, that great World War II motivational poster, and Woman with a Mango, The Gauguin, and Young Blonde Girl. So all kinds of art from Renoir to Grant Wood to Hokusai, all on view in jelly beans. No, you can't eat them, but you can sure look at them and get inspired to go get some jelly beans and create your own. That's right. Create and eat your own. All that's going on at the Children's Museum of Indianapolis.
Very cool. Hey, up at the Indianapolis Arts Center, they always have great exhibits. Perhaps you were up there for the Broad Ripple Art Fair last weekend, and you saw, right now, in fact, the Creative Renewal exhibits are up there, which are awesome.
Yes.
But they have a new exhibit that's opening up on June 10th. And it is titled Inside. It's actually featuring the work of artists who are inside at the Correctional Industrial Facility at Pendleton. So these are people who are in the correctional institution, and it is showing their work. And it should be a really, really interesting show. The big opening for that is Friday, June 10th from 6 to 8. And the exhibit will actually, they'll be up from June 3rd through July 11th.
Love it. Hey, from time to time, we cover the culinary arts on the Art of the Matter, and this isn't so much an event, but just an opportunity to support locally educated chefs. The International Culinary School is sponsoring something called 11 at the Pyramids, Thursdays and Fridays from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. You can go to 11 at the Pyramids and go to the student-run restaurant and sample
great
food made by tomorrow's chefs. They might be starring in your favorite local restaurant in a couple of years. You should get a reservation. You can do that by calling 613-4938. And again, where is it? It's at the Pyramids on the northwest side, Thursdays and Fridays, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. So go check that out.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Hey, I want to give just a quick reminder that next weekend, June 4th and 5th, is the annual Woodruff Place Flea Market. That's right. A great flea market in the historic neighborhood of Woodruff Place, just east of downtown, and very, very fun. It takes place from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. on Saturday the 4th and 10 to 5 on Sunday. Always worth checking out.
Absolutely. Some bargains. Oh, and if you're a gardener, there are usually people selling perennial divisions
well.
Yeah.
Good point.
Mm-hmm. Also, this coming up this week, opening on June 2nd, running through June 12th, Five Women Wearing the Same Dress. It's a play by Alan Ball. He wrote True Blood, 6 Feet Under, dark, twisty humor. Love his writing. He wrote this play in 1993, and it is also the debut production of Betty Rage Productions, whose vision is giving chicks artistic opportunities in Indianapolis. Love that. All that's going on at Theater on the Square, opening on Thursday and running for 2 weekends, basically. So, Five Women Wearing the Same Dress, support local, especially female artists.
Very cool. Hey, you know, we often talk each year, Sharon, about the Wicked World of Croquet.
That's right.
Which is taking place at the President Benjamin Harrison Home this year on Saturday, June 11th, 17th annual. You can still register to get a team in there, but something new they're doing this year, if you don't want to have a team, but you just want to go and watch the event, they are selling spectator tickets for $25, and it includes admission and lunch and seating in the Tea Party Lounge, where the Mad Hatter and the March Hare are going to be there with Tease Me Cafe. It also includes other drinks and a tour of the museum, and that's a really cool way to check out the Wicked World of Croquet on Saturday, June 11th.
I love it. And you should spell that first word just in case somebody's not...
Wicked. Wicked, excuse me. W-I-C-K-E-T, the Wicked World of Croquet.
Speaking of great old homes and properties, the Morris Butler House had such a great time last year with its green cleaning workshop that they're bringing it back on June 18th from 9 to 11 at the Morris Butler House. The Victorian housekeeper knew how to clean things with natural ingredients, including lemon juice and baking soda. And, you know, everything old is new again. You can figure out how to clean green without harmful chemicals. You do want to pre-register. It's just $10 per person. If you're a member of Indiana Landmarks, $7. You can register for the green cleaning workshop at indianalandmarks.org.
Sounds cool. And the last thing that I just want to mention is an annual tradition that takes place at Beef and Boards, where they have the Wright Brothers playing, and they are going to be playing on Sunday the 29th at 8 p.m. And that's something that they do every year over Memorial Day weekend.
Listen, I'll pass you the fried chicken if you'll pass me a frosty cold beverage.
Sounds like a plan.
Woo!
There it goes. We'll be back next week with more on
What'll We Do?
You're listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Indianapolis and Central Indiana. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. If your arts organization has an event or activity of which you think we should be aware, please contact us at least 3 weeks in advance. You can write us at The Art of the Matter, care of WFYI, 1630 North Meridian Street, Indianapolis, Indiana, 46202. Or you can email us at artofthematter@wfyi.org. You can also hear The Art of the Matter on wfyi.org.
The 56th annual Talbot Street Art Fair will take place June 11th and 12th this year. With over 270 artists from across the nation, this juried art fair continues to be ranked as one of the finest free fairs in the country. Travis DiNicola spoke with artists K.P. Singh and Sue Christensen about their involvement in the fair.
Now, both of you have... Let's say you're both seasoned in the art fair world.
How kind you are.
And I know both of you have participated in many art fairs. You've both been involved in Talbot Street Art Fair in the past a number of years. KP, we were talking last weekend about how long you think you had been a part of it. Did you figure it out? 40 years or so?
I may remember it more than I do. I think it is at least my 40th,
yes,
if not the 41st.
Very good.
I have been in all of them. Yeah, I mean, not all of them, but I've been for the last 40 years consecutively in the Talbot Street. And Sue had been a veteran even before I entered.
I think about 47 years.
I
was back in the old alley before we even got onto Talbot Street proper.
Wow.
And then nobody had anything, display units even. We hung on the side of garage walls. Those poor people there, we just drove nails into their garages and...
No big easy up tents and display.
No anything.
So you've seen it evolve, grow, change a bit over the years.
The whole art fair scene has really become pretty glamorous compared to what it was years ago.
You know, I remember an artist by the name of Joni. Remember Joni?
Joni Johnson. Oh, of course.
The watercolorist. And she would bring bundles of these watercolors and stack it on a table.
Mm-hmm.
No covering, no display, no flip through.
And
people will flip through each. They just shuffle through each of those pieces. And during weather and all that, you know, it was just a chaos. It just was a...
You didn't want to be next to Joni Johnson. You didn't want to have your display next to Joni Johnson because people would push you out of the way to get to her work. It was very popular. It was so popular, I bought several myself. She's a wonderful watercolor, so we miss her greatly. Yeah.
But and now good. I think with the formality that is out there, you know, each of these are really almost tents of creativity.
Mm-hmm.
You go in and you're looking at actually a mini gallery.
Mm-hmm.
In the way it is displayed or presented with panels and covering, I think it's a fantastically exciting opportunity for families to come.
Mm-hmm.
There is no charge to it, there is no cost to it,
and that's one of the great things about Talbot.
To talk to the artist, to the creator, and perhaps people like Sue and myself, they can take home some inspiration. Of course, we'd like for them to take some artwork, but it's a great opportunity for them to explore art as part of their life, as part of their creativity and acquisition, or even profession if they wish.
And I think for many people, going to an art fair may be one of the few times during the year when they have an opportunity to actually talk directly with artists. A lot of people who go to art fairs may not be the same people who are going to the art galleries or other shows or studios or what have you. I'm sure you see a lot of that.
That too. And then I taught for years too.
Mm-hmm.
And the nice thing was my students would come.
Mm.
And they could see me actually doing what I was preaching to them on a daily basis. It made me so much more credible that when I go in the classroom, they were believers because here I was out there doing it. And I think it impressed the parents too. And it was a nice way of what is it, publish or perish? It was that kind of thing. So.
And you know, the amazing part, Travis, is that we always have thought, you know, Indiana always looking inward. But the amazing part of it is, you know, there are artists and creators here. This year is 270 of them, and they are from California to New York, and they are from Texas to North Carolina. I mean, they represent the whole gamut of not only the geography of this nation, but also in terms of the media, in terms of their creativity. And it is an amazing array of possibilities to enjoy, to look, to communicate, to take something home.
And this is a juried fair.
This is a juried fair, and it's really is a, I think it's really packs in about 50,000-60,000 people each year because there's no charge, and it is on a street that, you know, you're almost really like in Italy, you're like in a bazaar in New Delhi, you know, old lady of New Delhi, that you are really kind of within a few feet of the art itself as you're passing through one way or another. And one of the fun things that I think is important for our listeners here is that there's no major stage, there's no major dancing, there's no major food court and all of that. It's all about dedicated to
it
the art.
Right.
But there
the
is food.
There is food.
There is food available. It's just not a humongous amount of space devoted to that.
Yeah.
But there are no other distractions. Right. So the artist takes center stage.
And that's what I meant to say.
We're happy to do that.
Sue, tell me a little bit about your work.
My work has evolved so much that it's even hard to say where I am now. In fact, I just did a show recently at the Stutz where I have a studio, and I sold a couple pieces that I did back in 1960. I get bored very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And so before I finish a series of work, I'm already into the next one. And then, of course, I have to show the new children. You always want to show your new children.
Sure.
So right now I'm doing collage, and I'm doing collage mainly doing found objects, and mainly those that I found in nature. I'm using a lot of tree bark and weeds and grasses and leaves off of the side of my house, which I'm preserving, and doing these in very contemporary design patterns. I'm a designer primarily, and my background was in the commercial field. So I was the art director at Channel 13 for several years, and I taught graphic design for IUPUI, and then I finished up my career at the J. Everett Light Career Center teaching commercial art there. So I just took all the things I used in commercial art and pulled them over to the fine art side.
Do I remember seeing a show that you did maybe a few years back with, They were like microscope slides.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, I floated magic marker dyes. That's a whole other series.
Well, maybe,
yes.
Well, maybe it was 10 years ago, but that was, I remember that work very specifically.
Yeah, there must be, in my repertoire, I probably have about 6 different techniques that I've used over the years.
Yeah, really kind of fascinating work, I thought, and especially just because you were using such different materials and techniques.
I'm always looking for something new. I'm jaded, bored, and old. What more can I say?
So, but for Talbot Street this year, mainly the collage?
Mainly the collages, mainly the nature collages this year. But I'm thinking about going back next year maybe and bringing out my very old retro things and seeing what happens, because as I said, I've recently had a surge in sales of those old pieces that I grew bored with and tired of and put away, and now it's time to bring them out again. So.
Very neat. Well, that should be a lot of fun. KP, I'm very familiar, of course, with your architectural illustrations, but tell me, how do you describe your work?
Well, these Travis are very finely executed drawings and of historic landmarks, courthouses, colleges, schools, places of worship, indigenous architecture like round barns and covered bridges. And they are really, in so many ways, I think they speak to us from two angles. One, the beauty of it, the architecture that we have inherited. On the other side, they also speak to us by saying, this is part of our heritage. This is the legacy that those who came before us. And so most of the drawings, and many of them are in composite form, there are multiple images in a single drawing. They are giving us a visual and a cultural, I think, tour, a cultural almost panorama of what a campus looks like, of what particular phase of, for example, cathedrals of spirit, where places of worship of all faiths are in a single drawing from many continents and many places. The thought being that this is our heritage and legacy, and along with the enjoyment that you can have by placing it on your wall, how about thinking about learning something about things that are really so precious, either locally or in the state or in the nation or around the world. And so the focus of the work has been simultaneously visual beauty and pleasure and so on, but also the education, awareness and alertness, and how we should not somehow destroy things that make us special, things that really add something to the culture and aesthetics and the visual excitement of our city, but more so who lived here and what he created and how important it is for us to preserve it for the generation next. So there is that huge education and preservation angle to the work.
Well, and nostalgia too. One of my best KP Singh pieces that I own is a rendering of Riley Towers. And my late husband's company actually made the mortgages on those, and he actually managed them for a while.
Well,
and I go by that every day and look at that and think of him and look at the work. And so there's so many buildings that we live in every day that become important to us and become very personal. I think you feel that need and that a desire to have that in your home, too, and look at it on a day-to-day basis. That's a nice thing to have.
And Sue has been one of my, Sue and, if you remember, Martha Slaymaker, you know, they have been, both of them have been my mentors. You know, when I began, I was not into art. I was into city planning and architecture.
Yes.
And they took me under their wings and they guided me through it, that how about displaying it? And they encouraged me along the way.
Let me ask you this. KP, you mentioned that that you had received some advice from Sue. I mean, do you find that this happens a lot at the art fairs, that you get to know other artists, you get to share ideas? And...
Oh, my gosh, you're in the trenches together.
Yeah.
Literally. They're like war veterans. As you know, weather and all kinds of things at the art fairs can really play a part. I think that that's true. I don't think artists, any of the ones who do street fairs, of course, are ivory tower enough that they're sort of clutching their secrets to their breast and saying, okay, we're not going to share anything. No, I think everybody's pretty open. And you know, as I look around the art fairs now, and of course, I'm one of the older senior veterans here, and I look around and I don't see a lot of young people. I see a lot of older people who are still on the circuit. And we've got to find these young people to carry on the same traditions that we've done over the years. And I think that's something that we need to look to and start encouraging our young people to do this.
Right. Well, let me put to you both one last question here. As far as for people who are going to art fairs, whether it's Talbot or Broad Ripple Art Fair or Penrod or other art fairs, when they're traveling around the country. What's the best sort of approach that an art fair goer should take when talking to an artist, when meeting an artist, when looking at the work? I mean, what's sort of like an ideal customer? Obviously, someone who buys something, but still, I mean, what's kind of an ideal customer for you? And I'll start with you, Sue.
Well, I think that it's your job as the artist to maybe approach them, too. I think that's where you have to start. And you just ask them, what is it that you see here that you're interested in? And since I use so many unusual objects, I mean, I have a line of jewelry where I'm using things like plastic cutlery and tree bark and things that are unusual. And so I'll ask them, do you want me to tell you a little bit about what I'm using as far as materials here? It certainly isn't fine jewels, but you might find it interesting. So I think it's the job of the artist to approach them, too. But if they're not timid, they'll find a way to talk to you, especially the younger people. The children, of course, they're wonderful because they have all this curiosity, and they'll make statements that would make some grown-ups cringe, but that's all right. That's all the fun of it, and I like their curiosity. How about you, KP? What do you think?
Well, I to my listeners, I send greetings. I would not be here for the 40th or 41st time at this Tower Street if you were not so encouraging and so supportive and so demanding that we do this study or with that study. So I receive as much input from you, each of you, as I might possibly be able to give to you by way of the artwork that you might take home. And think about it, right in the heart of Indianapolis, it is one of the largest art fairs in the country. It takes place right here. And it is because of each of you coming each year like faithful patrons of art and making us proud to be exhibiting regardless of the weather. And so I don't take a whole lot of credit for myself, but it is the audience that really makes things happen. And you are the audience. And certainly, of course, we'd like for you not to forget your charge card or checkbook at home. Because
definitely bring
why think after you have left, oh my God, this is, I wanted this KP's thing and I forgot to bring my checkbook. Come prepared and enjoy the fair, and we'll look forward.
Good.
And please say hello.
Travis DiNicola with artists KP Singh and Sue Christensen. You can see their work in the 56th Annual Talbot Street Art Fair on June 11th and 12th. Fair hours are Saturday from 10 to 6 and Sunday from 10 to 5, and the fair is located between 16th and 20th and between Delaware and Pennsylvania in the historic Heron Morton neighborhood. For more information, go to talbotstreet.org, and that is T-A-L-B-O-T street.org, talbotstreet.org. Thanks for joining us today. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Buselli Wallerab Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com. Please listen to The Art of the Matter again next Friday at 8 and Saturday at 4 when I'll chat with sound designer Andrew Hobson.
I'll get a preview of the 3 new National Geographic exhibits at the Children's Museum.
And Matt Soce joins us for a chat with musician Duke Tomato. And of course, we'll have our Arts Calendar Week Hall, What'll We Do?
So please listen next Friday at 8 and Saturday at 4 for The Art of the Matter here on WFYI for your information.
You've been listening to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you and from the Palladium at the Center for the Performing Arts, presenting its inaugural season through June. The Art of the Matter. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. Today's Art of the Matter was produced and edited by Travis DiNicola. The Art of the Matter on 90.1 FM, Indianapolis.